Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 225. Tonight's show is brought to you by Deep Frying Will Kill Everything On It. That's it. We're not taking questions. We're not continuing the conversation before we push record. I am talking, so I should go first, as is tradition.
I just want to say that, by the way, that 10-piece would require 10 chickens. Think about that.
Use every part of the buffalo.
Anyway, Jesus Christ. I just shut it down. Just yeah, I rode the trainer some this week, and I got a year older, and I...
Like because you're riding the trainer so much?
No, it was my birthday.
Oh, okay.
How old are you now?
I'm not 40. I'm 38. I'm a chainring size. Don't think that I want a 38 on my gravel bike or my mountain bike. So there you have it.
I mean, they make a 39 and a 40.
Well, 39 isn't a real chainring anymore. Like, who makes a 39? Is it some road double bullshit? No one rides that.
Wasn't what, like, standard road is 53?
39, 53, okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's what I thought, so.
Again, no one rides that anymore. I don't care if I'm wrong. No one rides that anymore. Not where I live. Yeah, I don't really have anything else good to talk about, so I'm just not. I think I put some shocks and speakers. I put the rear shocks on the Nissan. I put the speakers in the Nissan.
And we talked about that last week.
Oh, then I've done nothing. I had dinner with Troy and Carrie. That was really nice. Let's see. I didn't buy a 32-inch front wheel. I did buy a gravel frame, and it was delivered, but it turns out it's not the size that I ordered, and I found out very late in the process, i.e. once it was completely built, so... That was pretty cool.
You rode it down the street.
I rode it from where I park to where I work, and I was like, this feels weird, because I didn't have a T47 bottom bracket tool at home. So I just like hand tightened it and put the crank on and was like, everything is here. So I could size the chain and yada, yada. And yeah, it turns out I was delivered the wrong size frame. So I get to tear that bike apart and return that frame. Glad I didn't use that box to ship a beaver pelt yet. And I'm only mildly annoyed by that. So, in the Canadian sense, mildly annoyed. So,
only Troy and Carrie know what you're talking about when you say that.
I don't care.
Can I tell the audience so they know?
My text to Andrea was pretty long for my text messages. I don't usually write books. It was novella length, and it ended with, I just want to light everything on fire.
Is Troy Canadian?
We're getting too in the weeds. He's not. And we're not going to talk about his wife anymore. We're going to keep moving.
Okay. Carrie's a very nice lady. All right. Well.
Someone else should fucking start talking now.
Kenny, you should fucking start talking.
Yeah, sure. I rode my motorcycle over the weekend. I went back down to Woodside, which is off of Highway 6 on the way to Moab. Cool spot. I'm finding all kinds of stuff over there. It's insane. So I'm probably going to spend a few more weekends out there doing some exploring. But yeah, really freaking cool spot. It's kind of near, it's in a place called The Swell. It's kind of like a general area. But yeah.
Wait, is that part of the San Rafael Swell?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a pretty area.
Yep, super cool.
I haven't been there. I've just seen pictures.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. There's nobody out there, and you got to look a little bit to find some stuff, but there is single track all over the place. And it's kind of cool single track that sometimes it can be hard to follow, but there'll be like slick rock sections. And then, I sent you guys that picture. Gives you an idea. That's like one of the cooler looking spots. It doesn't all look like that. Definitely you got to do some sand riding, which isn't always the most fun, but it's not so much that it's annoying. It kind of mixes it up. But yeah, cool stuff. I was solo, so I was very cautious dropping down into things. It used to be that I would be more apt to climb something on the moto and then not be able to confidently descend it. But now I'm kind of like getting it to be the other way around as I get more experience on the moto, where I will drop down into stuff. And it's a little bit different, more so on the full size bike. Like, I'm pretty confident dropping down into stuff on the full size moto. And then you could get into a situation where you can't get back out again. So I was just being cautious, because there's plenty of washes and everything that you drop down into that you got to do. Like, I mean, it could be a 5 foot, and I say a drop, but near vert, and it's got like a little helper rock or something, and going down it, no big deal. Like you got 12 inches of suspension travel and like the thing ain't going to endo. So as long as you're moving forward somewhat, like the bike's going to go down it. The problem is, unless you got hard enduro skills, you might not be able to make it back out again. A lot of these are like, I don't know how to describe them, kind of slot canyony washes, and there might be one way in and one way out. So you could drop down into something that there is no other way out. So I was being very cautious. Like I would see something, I would like turn off the bike, I would hike down it and be like, okay, I got this and this and this. Let's go down that. Cause I can like, even a few of them, I even got to thinking like that one's borderline, but there were enough big kind of slate rocks sitting around that I could probably scoot some like 50 pounders around and like kind of make a ramp back up if I had to. And anyway, so I was just cautious, and it's kind of fun. I like that. There's something about that. I've talked about it a whole bunch on the show. There's just something about exploring solo that is fun because there is some inherent risk that goes with it, right? And yeah, it was fun. Explored a bunch of stuff, found a bunch of really cool stuff, had some good riding. I did some
What's
up?
When you're out there, like, what's your, like, maximum distance from your vehicle? Like, does your kind of, like, tolerance of risk change as you get further away?
Oh, 100%. I keep all that stuff in mind. And I usually have a general idea of where I am. I'm, like, looking for, is there a gravel road semi-nearby? And there were a couple sections where I was looking at. Here's the problem, though, is sometimes you can look at something and go, oh, the road's right there. But you don't realize that there's a 100-foot vert drop. Like, there is zero chance that you are going to get a motorcycle out of that thing. So,
where if you were on the road, you'd look down at the trail with binoculars.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Even though horizontally, they're like 50 yards apart.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, I was just being calculated and taking some amount of small risks. And I had to do a couple of crux moves where you have to kind of get amped up. It's very different for me. You know, if you're on a 260-pound motorcycle by yourself and you're 20 miles away from the car in a slot canyon, you think about things a little bit differently. And sometimes you got to get a little psyched up to do a little move. Because, yeah, I mean, if I nunchuck my moto down full rocks, you know, it might not be – I'm not so worried about getting hurt. It's like I physically can't get the motorcycle out, or I drop it in such a way and I like pierce a radiator and I'm 20 miles away from a car. Not much you can do. Like, yeah, could you limp it home? Yeah. Could I start it and run it for 2 minutes and then turn it back off and then wait for 20 minutes and then turn it back on and ride a little bit and turn it back off? Like, you could. It'd be a really bad time. So anyway, I just think about
do
stuff like that.
Do you keep stuff with you? Like in your pack, do you have like, I keep like an emergency blanket, and I usually have enough food with me if I'm going to be in the backcountry that like, I would have some snacks. Like, I might be hungry. I'd be hungry by morning, but I'm not going to like starve or anything, and enough water and all that stuff.
I probably need to have more preparation as far as like being able to set up a camp and start a fire and that kind of stuff. So I probably need to do a little bit better on that. Usually I'm not this far out. So yeah, I should be a little bit more prepared on that. But I have like tools and an electric pump and like an extra tube and, you know, moto tire levers and all that kind of stuff. And I've got a Garmin big boy satellite GPS thing. So I can, you know, if I needed to, I could text either authorities or a friend or something like that. What else? I've always got like an extra battery bank just in case, so I can charge my iPhone and charge my said GPS. I always have a big boy headlamp, like a separate battery pack headlamp, you know, like a multi-thousand lumen mountain bike style one. I've always got that with me just in case I get stuck, you know, in a 2 hour ride in the dark. Even though this thing's got a great headlight, I would still want to have, you know, that on me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or, yeah, what happens? Well, yeah, what happens if the bike dies and I can't start the bike, right? Like, I could at least just leave the bike. I mean, I could just ditch the bike and I could just hike out. It would suck balls. Like, do I want to hike for 8 miles? No, I don't. But, like, I'd be fine.
But also, having a headlamp is really cool because in the dark, if you, like, kicked up a rock and knocked your chain off, you could see what you were doing to put it
Yeah,
back.
Exactly. So, it's all I do think about. We'll call it 90% of the stuff I need, but I probably need to do better on the, you know.
A puffy jacket goes a long
way. Yeah, I always have layers. I've got, yeah. You know, I've always got like winter gloves in there, usually, unless it's like dead on summer.
God damn, Kenny can't ride up steep stuff because this fucking pack weighs 60 pounds.
And you got to balance
that
too, right?
The stuff you take. The stuff you take to make you comfortable will make you uncomfortable.
Yep, yep. I usually got some meat sticks in there, some gummy bears, and a couple extra drinks, that kind of thing. Sometimes some wine. A little mini box of wine.
Air fryer.
Air fryer was in the car. I did not bring it with me, though. But anyway, it was fun. There were a couple little crux climb sections, actually, where I had to, you know, get up some rock faces. And I just had to kind of psych myself out to just do it. And, you know, they're not that bad once you just commit to doing them. I'm sure I'll mess one up one of these days when I'm out solo. I would definitely ride. I ride very differently. I have a much different risk tolerance when if I have a buddy with me. So
it depends on the buddy.
But anyway, it's fun. It's just incredible, all the stuff that we have out here. And it's pretty incredible what those motos are capable of with even intermediate rider on them. It's freaking wild. You just point that thing at something and have even a moderate amount of skill and it'll just go up it. It's insane. But that's it. That was my weekend. I'll probably go back out again this weekend. It's been still like in the 60s. I say 60s. That's a little exaggeration. It's been in like the mid to upper 50s. So unseasonably warm. Still haven't gotten any snow. We might get something next week, but I think this Saturday and Sunday are going to be like near 60 degrees in Salt Lake. So I'll probably do some more motoing. We'll see. That's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been warm here too. I haven't really done a whole lot. A little bit of beaver trapping. I'm feeling slightly better than I was last week, but I won't get too, as Matt would say, in the weeds on that. But yeah, slightly better with the hormone stuff. Not really 100%, but I mean, like just a tiny bit better than I have been. So it's a little better. I'm not getting my hopes up yet, but yeah, that's really it. I don't know, unless Matt thinks of something that I've done that I can't think of.
No, you've done nothing you want to talk about.
I did go for a fat bike ride over the weekend in Leadville, but that's about it. It was nice. There's not a lot of snow in Leadville, unfortunately, but there's a little bit. You could probably just ride a regular mountain bike on it, honestly, but yeah, there's a little bit. So should we get into new shit?
Let's do it.
Surly released a bike with a carbon fork.
Oh, damn. What is it?
It's the Midnight Special. It got carbon fork and carbon rims.
Are those carbon wheels like 2,000 gram carbon wheels?
They are. Let me go to their website to see if I can figure it out.
I'm surprised they put a somewhat normal looking handlebar on there.
It's a road bike.
That can hold gravel tires.
I mean, it holds 40s or 42s.
That's gravel tires. Is there still a UCI rule for cyclocross tires? It's like 33 max.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't know if that had ever changed. It's been so long since I raced cyclocross. I mean, more than 10 years.
They're Terravel rims with DT hubs. So they're not terrible, but who knows what they weigh because they're not actual rims.
You mean you couldn't just go and buy those rims aftermarket?
I guess you can.
There you go.
370 gram rims with DT hubs, so no, they're not too heavy.
All right. Have you guys seen that Strava is using machine learning and they are using enhanced e-bike detection to basically delete anyone who was detected for riding an e-bike or being in a motor vehicle?
Well, they didn't delete them. They deleted the rides.
Yeah, like they deleted them off of the leaderboards for rides.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question. I mean, I get it, but does anybody care about Strava anymore? I feel like they've made themselves irrelevant.
I don't know.
They just keep paywalling more stuff, so...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't used their shit in forever because they paywalled everything, and, like, does anybody care? And there's so many... You know, the probability of you getting a KOM somewhere is so minuscule these days. Like, I'm not saying that you should never do it, but, like, kind of who cares? I don't know.
I mean, if I'm sitting at my computer... And I get that email like so-and-so took your QOM. I'll go and look at it. And if it's obviously an e-bike, I'll flag it. But I mean, half the time I see that on my phone and unless they've changed something, like you literally cannot flag a ride from a mobile device. Most of the time I just kind of like forget about it. So there's probably a few out there that, well, maybe not now, but yeah, like, you know, if it's really convenient, I'd go and like flag it just because, but... I don't know. Yeah, I don't care enough to, like, put it on my to-do list and do it when I get home to my computer.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Mountain bikes.
Yeah.
There's spy shots of a new Trek coming. Probably
Ooh, that color is cool.
Probably a real XC bike.
Not just a soft tail.
Not a soft tail. I mean, it's truly a suspension bike, but it was an 80 mil travel bike, the Super Caliber. And the Top Fuel is a trail bike. It is not not an XC bike. So I have a feeling they're going to have a really hard time naming it because they have bastardized their lineup over the last few iterations where, you know, original, like, Trek absorbed Fisher. They had the Superfly 100 when they released the original Top Fuel that I had in 16. They wanted to distance themselves from the Superfly name, and then they changed the Top Fuel into a tall boy and made it into a not trail or not a an XC, a long legged XC bike, but a short trail bike. They made the Fuel into the Remedy, and the Slash is just a Slash still. And what they've done is made it where now they're going to have to name something like. Everyone knew what a Top Fuel was, like, because Trek had a Fuel 26er, and when they released the 29er, they called it a Top Fuel. And if they just hadn't bastardized all their naming years ago, or their lineup years ago, they should have just done this anyways, but they didn't, so.
Did they say in that article what it's going to be called?
No, this okay. this is very...
Very spy shoddy?
Very spy shoddy.
Quote, unquote, spy shoddy.
Yep.
Allied has a new trail bike now. It's the Fitz. It's a 140 bike. And the lightest version is 26 pounds.
Yeah, I touched that bike in person a good amount of time back. And I didn't get to ride it, but I got to see it. And I really just want to give them my credit card. And I'm not going to, but I really want to.
You know, I think their bikes look pretty cool, but I don't know. It just isn't really doing it for me, which is kind of dumb coming from someone who...
Wait, what about it do you not like?
It's going to be really petty. I don't like their bike names. Like, it's extremely petty. It's really dumb. I should just edit this out. But, like, okay, so the BC40 is named after the Back 40 trails, which are literally the most... Other than the Wolf River trails in Memphis... Like, those are the number one, like, kind of most boring trails because you can't even really go fast on them because there's always a bunch of walker, like, dog walkers and stuff, and you just can't be that kind of an asshole. The Back 40 trails are, like, the most boring trails in the fucking world. And that's going to piss some people off in Arkansas, I know, but it's just is. It's like they just made just junk miles of single track, and just to name a bike after that is ridiculous. And... Granted, I've never been to the Fitz Mountain Trail. It's supposedly, according to this, you know, a gnarlier trail. So I'll reserve judgment, but I will say that I don't see any trail in Arkansas being long enough to really, like, and they're like, it was made for these trails. It's like, okay, the downhills in Arkansas are for like 30 seconds or a minute, maybe, if you're lucky. I don't know. It's probably fun, and I'm sure it's a good bike, but just... That just bothers me that, like, they're making these really awesome bikes and, like, we tested them in Arkansas. It's like, okay, that's cool. Like, did you test them on, like, really big stuff? But I don't know. I know I sound petty and picky, but that's just how I am.
All I know is I know one of the dudes that test rode this bike and, you know, there's the road gap at the Bentonville Trails.
Yeah.
He was doing those on an aluminum hardtail with like a 140 fork.
Yeah.
And
that stuff's really well built.
Hold on. This is the same guy that ripped a chainstay in half on a Cannondale Scalpel High Mod, and his giant revolt, the steer tube snapped off while riding trails on it. So I really trust his opinions on bikes because he didn't crash the Cannondale. He didn't crash the revolt. They just fucking broke under this absolute unit of a man. So...
I know. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it's fine. And I don't think anyone should make their purchase decisions based on my opinion in this situation.
All I'm saying is when I met this man in person, it made me question my sexuality, like 100%. And I hope he listens to this episode because Jesus Christ. Anyways, we should.
Are you uncomfortable now?
He will be.
All right. What do you guys want to talk about? That was kind of like those. That's the most interesting thing that I saw in the last week, other than Chris King making new Grease.
Yeah, there's a little update on the Shimano crank stuff, which I still stand by that they should have just done a full recall on that. And they're still like shuffling stuff around, like surprise, surprise. You can't just tell a bike shop to look at your crank and see if it's corroded from the inside out, because you don't know until it snaps apart. So I guess they're now going to, because enough people have been complaining about it, they're going to, I guess, send bike shops some type of magnification device that you're supposed to use to inspect these cranks. Like, they are going to die on this hill, and it is dumb.
Have you, like, I don't know, I think we, like, talked about this when it first happened. Like, if I was in a bike shop and someone brought their crank in for me to inspect, I would look at it, and if it was of that era that they said these might fall apart, you should look at them, I would look at it and say, yeah, you should replace that.
Well, the problem is they make you submit a picture showing that you think it's bad, and they won't, even if you do somehow say it's bad or use a fake picture or whatever, once you send it in, they'll inspect it again, and then if they don't think it's broken, they'll just send it back.
Wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The really annoying part about this too is, what do you do? So many people broke their cranks, and Shimano told them to pound sand.
Right.
And then it's done. It's done and over.
That, like, you've thrown away.
That is water. Exactly.
Crank.
That is water under the bridge. And, like, do you think you're going to, yeah, how the hell are you going to find that thing? Like, it got thrown away. I guess a few people probably kept them or something, or bike shops held on to them because they were hilarious. But God, so many people just probably got hosed. And yeah, who knows how many other people got hurt and didn't say anything. I don't know. It's not that I want the downfall of Shimano, and I understand that this thing is unbelievably expensive, but they made just a massive engineering blunder, and they don't want to own up to it. And that fucking sucks.
Yep.
So yeah, the moral of the story is, be very careful. If you're going to glue cranks together, you better be real careful.
Use good glue.
It's hard to do. Like, it's really, I'm not an engineer, but I definitely know that when you are gluing shit together, that's when bad stuff happens. It's very, very difficult to do it correctly. Like, there are amazing freaking epoxies out there and all this and that, but, like, everything has to be perfect. It's so hard.
Wait,
to make
what did you call it?
Epoxy.
It's epoxy.
I think it could be either one.
There's two E's in front of it. Epoxy.
This is like, say the word email.
A mail.
Oh my God. This is,
you walked into that one.
This is Kenny. You know what? Fuck everyone.
Man. Anyway, don't glue shit together. Look at that submarine. They fucking glued that submarine together. It worked really bad. Just quit doing this shit. Anyway.
I just played, like, Google's pronunciation of epoxy is what it sounded like.
It's more like I pronounce it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
So, yeah. Shimano, they're going to send us better magnifying glasses.
Okay.
That's really all I got as far as news. Nothing else really jumped out at me. A little bit of a slow news week, to be honest. We haven't answered a whole lot of listener questions, I feel like. Surely we've got some of those piled up.
We've got two.
Two?
There might be some in Slack also. Oh, did you see Topeak is making their own alt valve?
Wait, Jesus, how did you just pronounce that? Am I, like, fucking on drugs? Topeak? It's Topeak.
There's no E in it. It's not a toe.
How do you pronounce tomato?
Matt, I'm just going to say opposite of whatever you're saying.
Kenny, if you could find the mental strength to just mispronounce a word in every sentence for the rest of the show.
Oh, man. Also,
I will drive to...
So they made a new valve called a TurboFlow valve. Matt is double face palming right now.
The English language, the English language is fucking terrible. Like, what are we doing, guys?
The English language.
It's so dumb.
We just need to just keep moving. I just can't fucking.
I think as America, we need the metric system and a new language because ours is ridiculous.
God. So these replace your Presta valve core. So if you have a standard Presta that has a threaded stem and a removable valve core, you can put these on your bike. And they, let's see.
I can't wait till I find some asshole that has like a regular valve, a titanium valve stem, and then a tire whiz, and then this fucking thing on top.
So it's supposed to be a 3 times greater airflow. And
how fast do people want to air up their goddamn tires?
It's supposed to be more resilient to getting clogged with sealant.
Okay, and keep going. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to it.
And it works with a standard Presta valve head or whatever, pump head.
How much do they cost?
Hold on. $34.95. You get 2 valves, 2 caps, and an aluminum valve core removal tool.
So $35.
Yep.
Okay. So you realize that for $32, I can get 80 Presta valve cores from Amazon.
All right.
I just don't understand the whole, like, I need more airflow and I need this and my valves clogged. Like, valves are cheap. Just buy one of these 20 packs. And, you know, we did inventory at the shop this week, and on some high turn items that are easy to kind of run out of, like bar end plugs, it's, we don't have a ton of space for back stock, so we don't have just an extra Wheels Manufacturing jar O plugs that's 120 regulars or mountain bikes and 30 road plugs in a box. I don't have room to backstock an extra one. So I put 20 in a Ziploc bag and wrote last 20, order more. And it's just a good reminder, like, oh, we're getting low. So buy yourself a 20 pack, put 5 in a little Coke baggie, because you got to be snorting Coke if you think you need a fucking turbo flow. And when you get down to the last 5, just fucking order more.
I mean, I can see it being useful, maybe, like, if you're trying to set up a tubeless valve or just, a tubeless tire, but you can pull your valve
core. At the end of the day, it's not going to move more air than a Presta valve stem with no core in it. And if you're putting sealant in, if you're putting a tire on, I don't care if you put the tire in through the valve or, yeah, put the sealant in through the valve, or you poured it in the tire before you fully put the tire on the rim. I don't care. Pull your valve out and look at it. And if it's bad, throw it in the trash can and put one of your replacement valves in and move on with your fucking life. I just, the muck off big bore and the clicks and it, no one fucking care. The muck off big bore doesn't even have a valve core in it. So you have to attach your pump and then turn to 90 degree ball valve and then inflate it to the exact pressure you want and then turn the 90 degree valve and then take it off and then put a cap on so shit doesn't get in there. Fuck all that.
Also, if you're pumping
it up,
valve caps. If you're pumping it up and your pump head flies off, all of your air immediately rushes out.
Is that speculation or experience?
Experience.
That was cool, huh?
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, when that bitch is open, it's open.
I don't like valve caps. I don't like keeping up with them.
I don't either. Valve caps are fuck. I only put valve caps on trailers.
If you turn them an extra, like if you just barely over tighten them, the plastic ones like crack and fall off on the trail, and then you left plastic on the trail, which is, we don't need more plastic.
Yeah, I don't need any more plastic in my ball.
Someone needs to come up with a speed loader. You know, like the in racing,
revolving
in racing, those like special fuel cans they use, or pressurized fuel systems. But I'm thinking more of like UTV racing or similar, where you have a giant like special 10 gallon jug and it's got that crazy side vent thing on it, and you just like plug that sucker in and it deposits all the 10 gallons of fuel in a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm.
We need that, but for sealant.
So you can like just blow a like 4 ounces of sealant.
Yeah, you got to be fast
you
with
have
it,
just
though.
Another,
if you're not fast
you
enough,
have
you
another
fill your
way
entire
of exploding
tire
sealant.
With sealant, like 128 ounces by accident.
Oh, God. Pressurized sealant. That's never a bad idea in a bike shop, is to just have another way of putting sealant on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Also, pressure and tires. We have free air at our shop. There's a thing outside, a hose, and one of the parked inflators. It's what we use in rental. It's like in our rental setup area, and anyone can use it. And this gentleman with, let's say, no fixed address, had his bicycle upside down and was by himself, but he was talking a lot. And he was airing up his tires. I walked into the retail side and I grabbed something, and I was walking back out to the service side. Like, there's a little plaza or courtyard in the middle, and he was still airing up his tire. And in my mind, he was airing up his second tire. And about the time that I was, like, parallel, or he was right perpendicular to me, as in he's directly to my left as I'm walking, his tire blows off the rim and explodes. And he goes, I just didn't break stride. I'm like, I wasn't involved. I'm not going to be. And I just moved on with my life and nothing happened. So
did he just leave?
I didn't see him again. So yeah, I think so.
All right. Do we want to talk about Greece or do we want to go to the two listener questions?
We can talk about Greece.
Let's go to some questions.
No, let's talk about Chris King's new gold grease.
Yeah, they've made something to replace their silver grease for their bearings. It's gold grease. And it's... Let me find the percentages here.
We weren't allowed to service those bearings anyway, right?
Chris King?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have the parts or the whatever the toolkit, you can service their bearings.
I mean, they had the old grease gun jammer tool for the bottom bracket that cost $200. But are you supposed to put like their grease in it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you're not supposed to. They don't make. You can't take the seals off their bearings, can you?
And that's the picture in the article shows someone holding a bearing without a seal on it.
Hmm. Maybe it fell out.
It's not an ABEC 5, Kenny.
So, gold grease produces 25% less drag than silver grease right out of the box. And it maintains a 16% advantage even after 1,000 miles of use.
Those are some pretty specific numbers for some grease.
And then it gets better. It has a wear-in effect where the drag decreases by 18%. Over the first 1,000 miles compared to the initial performance. So, yeah.
Is that going to be a thing for the ultra bougie? Is you're going to get two Chris King owners. You're going to get one Chris King owner who wears in the grease for you and then baby birds it, transfers it from his hub into your hub.
Oh, that's
so you don't
have
to go through the break-in process.
You know what I think Chris King should do next? Is make a
platinum wax shut
type
up
grease that you can dip your bearings into
a special hub bath. It's a special machine. Yeah. That can only Chris King hubs can be inserted into.
Yep. And it bathes your bearings with wax.
$1 million idea.
Yep.
In real news this week, a ultrasonic drivetrain cleaned the wax off someone's bike and it worked way better.
We should move to listener questions now.
You don't want Matt wax rant number 77?
No, we don't need another one of those.
All right. So Rick, hey y'all, I have a 2021 Kona unit that I would like to use for. Oh, we read this already. You emailed me that one. We covered that.
You said that you didn't.
I forgot.
Oh, well, then we have one listener question. Unless you also did this one?
Yep, we did that one too.
Oh, well, then we don't have any listener questions.
Okay, then what do we have in the old Slack?
I know for a fact that there were a couple that we glossed over in past episodes.
We've got from Jeff. He says, hey, Kenny, got a question for you. What did you like about the Maxxis Ardent? I have to say those were perhaps one of my least favorite tires ever. Their cornering traction seemed decent until it suddenly wasn't. And then I would be sliding on my side towards the outside of a turn. That happened a couple of times to me with Ardents. And I ride in the Seattle area, which pretty much has hero dirt for about 11 months out of the year. I think maybe the cornering knobs gave way too easily compared to more modern tires. Another tire with that same shortcoming was the Continental Trail King. No disrespect intended, just really curious. Thanks.
And we covered that one too.
I mean, I always just said, like, the Ardent was, like, I don't know, when I first started really cross-country and endurance racing, like, that was the knobbiest cross-country-ish weight tire that you could get. Like, you could get knobbier tires, but they were, like, a good bit heavier. You could get lighter tires, but the traction was not really there. So, yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of, like, the happy medium of tires of that era. And now there's just better stuff out there. So, yeah, like, it wasn't the greatest tire, but it filled that slot better than anything else did when it was at its prime. But that's what we got in patron Slack.
I feel like there was a novel question perhaps from a couple weeks ago that we didn't answer, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, we had the one. Matt, do you want to read the email from Dominic?
Yeah, I need to email him back as well.
So Dominic was the one, the guy that was asking us about running a bike shop.
Okay.
And we gave him some advice.
And was there a follow-up, perhaps?
There was. And Matt has that email. He's opening it now.
Not very quickly. I'm working as fast as Google will.
What are you typing in over there? How do you usually get to your email? Do you just like the first thing that's got a search box, you're like, my name is Matt. I want to get to my email, please. And you see what AI comes up with.
I went to Gmail. I went to open my second account. And when opening my second account, it wanted me to log in again. And when logging in again, I had to use my Mac password. Ah. And then after I logged in, it wanted to tell me about all of its AI summary tools and all the bullshit that I had to hit X on so I could actually see the fucking text in the email. So, yes, my computer experience in 2020, or my experience with the internet in general in 2026 is off the charts.
It's so bad. Anyone out there in bike shop world, if you've ever had to log on to the Thule B2B, good Lord. It is the most convoluted thing. It's got like some Microsoft authentication and you got to like put in numbers on your phone and then it like takes a picture of your face. And then you got to put in the face numbers onto the website and then like again, and then it asks for the dick pic. It is insane. Just so I can order a fucking rack.
Yeah, I just wouldn't buy Thule.
I have definitely thought about that.
I would just call them. Hey, I want to make an order and this will be faster than going through your login process. And I would do that like twice a day. So Dominic says, hi, Matt. Thank you for the really good advice. Most of the stuff you guys said we were already doing, but some specifics like forecasting, as you mentioned, and really in capital letters, taking time to look over the customer's bike has helped a lot. In the past week, I tested the advice and it's already made a direct impact. We now look at the bikes more closely and, as you'd expect, find more things that are wrong and can upsell the customer. They appreciate that we take time to thoroughly inspect their bikes. I added a digital caliper to the service writing area per your advice. Also, as a side note, although we are heavy on repairs, we do try to sell as many bikes as possible. As you mentioned, it's the best per hour income. I want to say thank you again for taking the time to answer my question so thoroughly. It really made an impact on the way I think of the business and how we handle customer service. Cheers, Dominic. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I'll put it out there right now. If you are in the contiguous U.S., I will get on an airplane and work in your shop for a week. Price to be determined, but I'll do it.
I was going to say, is that for any JRA listener, like anyone that's listening to your voice right now?
No, like Kenny, you know, used to be like, I'll push on your fork in the parking lot for a Smirnoff. I'm like, I will.
Matt will just go like full. You know how Gordon Ramsay had that show where he would go to a restaurant and like.
Kitchen Nightmares? Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah. I don't remember. I think it was Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he would go and basically tell people like, I mean, not. He did it in his, like, you know, very marketable style of yelling and cussing and telling people they sucked and this looks like a dog's dinner and whatnot. Like, Matt can come and do that.
That's kind of what we do, though, already.
Yeah, I mean, but Matt can go and do that in person to your bike shop for an undisclosed amount of money.
And we will also do this.
Or a Smirnoff.
We can do R&D
as well. A non-alcoholic Smirnoff.
So if you have an idea, bring us in. We'll sit at your conference table with all the stakeholders in the room, and we'll tell you what you think about your product before you release it.
Yeah. I'll let you know if the name sucks.
And the first thing I will do is make some ass. My first thing is, does it have a through axle? And there's a little flow chart here. Yes. No. No. Why not? Right? This is for a bike. Yes. Does the through axle use a 6mm hex key? Yes. You're great. No, I flipped the table over. Look, through axles use a 6mm hex. If it's not a 6mm hex.
In the rear also?
If it's a through axle, it's a 6.
What if it uses the European 6, a.k.a. the T?
That is not a 6. There's not a 6 on your multi-tool, Scott. So, it should be a 6.
That is a good point. Like, having mixed size hex key through axles is kind of dumb.
It's not even that. I am going to Kenny this a little bit. I work on so many bikes, not as many as Kenny. Not as many as other people that are full-time mechanics.
I mean, that's not really Kenny, true. No. I'm just a consultant now. I don't really work on bikes anymore.
But I work on a lot of bikes. And when I put the bike in the stand and I'm going to take the wheels off to change the tires, I should be able to put the bike in the stand, lock it down, grab a six, remove your wheels, put the through axles back in the frame or fork, respectively, wherever they were removed from for safekeeping. That's another little freebie for you out there. If you take the wheel off and you put the through axle through the wheel and then you knock the wheel over and the fucking through axle rolls under the bench and then you got to crawl around on the floor and find it and clean it off. And then what if you just put it right back in its little home where it threads in like a half turn and can't fall out? Just saying. Because guess what? When you go to put that wheel back in, you know where the through axle is going to be? Right in your fucking face where you need it.
You know what would solve that whole hex key thing is if through axles had levers on them.
Levered through axles are worse than a 5 in the rear. I will also die on that hill.
I agree. I prefer just a good 6 mil. I just leave my multi. I usually have multiple AWS 10s in my pocket, and I'll just leave that 6 attached to the axle. And
you have every AWS 10 in the shop in your pocket at one time.
And we got usually 100 in the shop at a time.
That's what I'm saying. You got them all in your pocket.
Yep. And yeah, you put that, you put the axle still attached to the tool through that little hole in your park tool stand. And there's like 4 or 5 of those little axle size holes in at least our park tool stands. And I put both the axles
electric
there.
Ones don't have those.
Ooh, you should drill them.
I'm not allowed to touch those anymore. I don't get to work on our electric stands anymore.
Got electric. And Dominic, this is for you too. Like, electric, even if you, I mean, they're originally, their intention is for e-bikes and for, you know, really heavy stuff. Electric stands are fucking awesome because you don't have to worry about like two different height mechanics working on the same stand and like someone's going to be shafted on the height of the bike. And then sometimes you want a bike right up, like you can always have whatever you're working on at the height of where you don't have to stretch or bend or anything. It's just, it saves just a lot of wear and tear on your body. So like for, you know, a home mechanic or someone, like if you work on your bike, I don't know, once or twice a month, it doesn't fucking matter. But if you work on bikes, you know, 30 to 40 hours a week, that stuff adds up. Like lifting bikes in and out of the stand when the stand's really high, or like in Salida, especially because it's, you know, the kind of the crossroads of two bikepacking routes. Like you've got the Colorado Trail close by, you've got
Tour Divide.
Yeah, the Tour Divide route that goes right through the middle of town, or one edge of town, pretty much the middle of town. Those bikes are a pain in the ass to get in a stand, and having an electric work stand where you can just roll the bike up to it and maybe just lift it, you know, an inch or two off the ground to clamp it in the stand and then push a button to raise it up to where you need
Shit.
It.
I don't lift anything.
I do.
No, I'm saying like, if it's heavy,
oh, yeah.
I don't lift it a millimeter. I clamp it, and then up we go, baby. I'm not picking up that shit. Also, really cool thing you can do with an electric stand. Let's say you're doing dropper post service, like a one-up service. You're going to do a simple seal service on it, or change a cartridge, whatever. It's all the same. But you're going to blow apart one of those. You run the stand down until it pinches the rear tire under the arm, not the clamp itself. Then you pop the seat post out and you clamp it in the clamp and you crack the actuator. You flip it over. You crack the top nut on like the top of the lower. And then you throw it on your workbench. You do the seat post overhaul. You put it back in your stand. You tighten it. You flip it. You tighten it. You put it back in the bike. Like, fucking dope. Those things are sick.
Yeah, they're a really good investment. Like, they're expensive, but if you can swing it, it's a really good tool for bike shop efficiency. I don't know how we got on electric bike stands, but
I think we're just talking about bike shop functionality.
Through axles, and there's not a through axle holder on the park stands, which is a bummer, but the bike holds them great. The bike holds them like 99% of the bike's life. So that's where they go.
Yeah, the only problem, I mean, that's perfectly reasonable, but then if you're going to be fast putting wheels back in, then you got to unthread that axle and like hold it.
Well, you don't have to thread it at all. You can actually just jam it back through there.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it's not going to fall out. I do it every day. It's not going to fall out. And it's exactly where I expect it to be, which is right where I need it, which is in the dropouts. Just saying. Also, I may be still salty about that time we drove to Mississippi without a front through axle. But then we went back to Memphis and got a bunch of KOMs and QOMs on all the trails because no one was around.
Yeah, it was like 40 and barely drizzling. Like, it was that just dick mist of, like, it wasn't really, like, it wasn't wetting the ground much. So it wasn't muddy or anything, but it was just nasty.
The best way to describe this rain.
90% humidity.
No, the best way to describe this precipitation, I was going to say, is like 102% humidity.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so humid that some of it just has to fall out of the sky, but it's not like droplets, really.
Yeah, it was like as gray as it could possibly be and 40 degrees and, 102% humidity. And so there was no one on the trail. And that was the time, like, on Wolf River Trail, like, you could just haul ass. Like, the parking lot was empty. There was not a single soul on the trail. And we rode it like a freaking cross-country race course. It was amazing.
Yep. What else we got? What can we answer?
I think that's kind of it. We need people to write into our contact form on jraShow.com. Main page, just scroll to the bottom. And even if it says by sending this email, you're signing up for receiving emails, and that's not going to fucking happen. I don't write emails, so don't worry about it. Email us your questions, comments, things you want to hear us talk about, you know, all that shit.
Anything else?
That's all I got. Let's shut her down.
All right. I'm going to read our patrons.
Jesus shit.
At $10 a month or more, we've got Kurt. Wow, that's so unhinged, I'm not going to say it out loud. Jim the fucked up trike guy. Burt Reynolds, crusty stash.
No, that doesn't say Reynolds. Burt, there's a missing letter there.
I mean, that's still how you pronounce it, though. Burt Reynolds, crusty stash. Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds mustache. Taper Bore Pro, my pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Free Gabe Horn, Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, My Name is Clayton, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan Plum, sorry, just Ryan, fuck, Bill, Aaron, Cowboy Up, a gentleman's club for reverse centaurs.
Oh my God, I don't even want to, I can't think about this more.
Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
She nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Butt Stuff, Chat GPT at $11 per month. Candace Cockfit. Dean at $12 Australian. Patamillan Disco Ball at $14 Australian. And at $20 a month, we have Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds. Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month. I do not have my ducks in a row. I have squirrels, and they are at a pagan rave. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast. At Fitty. Those are some high-quality patron names.
It's very good.
We have very creative and wonderful patrons. But that's it. If you guys want longer episodes, ask us some questions, and we'll talk about it and rant.
We've also had long-ass episodes and not answering a single question, FYI.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, if that's all you guys got.
Shut it down.
That's all that I have. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.
There's some shit coming out of your pads.